Just a couple of side notes before we start. Regarding this project Sri Devi's working on, if you're a Prabhupada disciple and have not yet reached out to her and filled out this information, I do recommend it. She sent me the bio she put together on my wife and I read mine, and I thought, oh, well, this guy actually did something. So, you know, she's actually quite good at it. Wow, what a turban, huh? I mean, that turban is just really nailing it today. Just incredible. Wow. All right. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo. So we're continuing to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, ninth chapter, text number 12. Aho kashtam aho nyayam.
Aho kashtam aho nyayam.
yad yuyam dharmanandanam jivitum narhata klishtam vipra dharma chutatrasya vipra dharma chutatraya. Well, I'm glad we don't get graded on this. Aho kashtam. Actually, we are getting graded. Aho kashtam aho nyayam. Yad yuyam dharmanandana. Jivitum nahatam klishtam. Vipra dharma chutastraya. Aho kashtam aho nyayam. Yat yuyam dharmanandana. Jivitum nahata klishtam. Vipra dharma chutashraya. Please chant. Kastam. What terrible sufferings. Aho. Oh. Anyavyam. What terrible injustice. Yet. Because. Yuyam. All of you good souls. Dharmanandana. Sons of religion personified. Jivitum. To remain alive. Na. Never. Arata. Deserve. Glistam. Suffering. Vipra. Brahmanas. Dharma. Piety. Achuta. God. Ashraya. Being protected by. Translation. Bhishma Dev said, oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations. Yet, You were protected by the Brahmanas, God, and religion. Yudhishthira was disturbed due to the great massacre in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Bhishma Dev could understand this, and therefore he spoke first of the terrible sufferings of Maharaj Yudhishthira. He was put into the difficulty by injustice only, and the Battle of Kurukshetra was fought just to counteract this injustice. Therefore, he should not regret the great massacre. He wanted to point out particularly that they were always protected by the Brahmanas, the Lord, and religious principles. As long as they were protected by these three important items, there was no cause for disappointment. Thus, Bhishma Dev encouraged Maharaj Yudhishthira to dissipate his despondency. As long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life. Bhishma Dev, as one of the authorities in the line, wanted to impress this point upon the Pandavas. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yunatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachanam Pandum Nam Jayate Girim Yaktipatamaham Pande Sri Gurum Dinatarina Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnadevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Shigarada Shivasati Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste nectar, my obeisances to you, Srimad Bhagavatam. Stay high forever. Chant and be happy. May you have a blissful life in Krishna consciousness. These are greetings that we hear, exchange, and commonly give within Krishna consciousness. Each one may be at a different point. You don't hear anybody so much anymore say, stay high forever. You know, we kind of coined that at the time of the development of ISKCON that it was appropriate. Chant and be happy. You know, we want everyone to chant and be happy. And when we exchange with each other, or when we sign a letter, may you have a blissful life in Krishna consciousness. These are standard greetings that we use to describe the Krishna conscious experience, to encourage each other to take up Krishna consciousness, because you'll be happy, you'll be high, you'll be blissful. Yet, right off the bat, our scriptures talk about nothing but birth, death, old age, and disease. I mean, what's one of the first verses any of us learn? Martrasvar Shistakunteya Sitoshnashukadukada Agayamami Nondidyam Tad Sitikshashvabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception and must be tolerated and must not be disturbed by them. So we're encouraged on one hand this picture of blissful, joyful happiness in Krishna consciousness, yet all through our scriptures is heartbreak, distress, loss, death, dishonor. A couple of Sundays ago I was speaking about Dhruva Maharaj, you know, and all the difficulties he went through. And then here, Grandfather Bhishma, so much suffering. To know that his mother, his very mother, killed his seven brothers. I mean, hi, Mom, I love you. Just wish you hadn't killed all my brothers. I mean, wow, I had to carry that around, you know? And to be destined to have to give up all thoughts of happiness and love and comfortable family life just for the sake of his father, you know? All right, I'll give it all up. I won't do any of it. To have to watch as dear family members who were faultless, who would wrong no one, were themselves wronged, and then to have to side with the wrongdoers. And so on and so on and so on. Bhishma Dev has all of these things there. So this story of Grandfather Bhishma Dev is not a story of happiness and blissful life in Krishna consciousness. It's a story of suffering. It's a story of difficulties. And does this distress, this difficulty that Bhishma Dev has to go through, make him hard-hearted? Does he become a recluse? Does he turn himself against the world and against others and just become this, to use a modern-day phrase, grumpy old man? I see these guys in Lowe's all the time. They come in and you know right off the bat, oh, I really don't want to talk to this person. You know? I had a gentleman I dealt with the other day. It was just one of those exchanges where every single word was the wrong word from me. I mean, you asked me for help. You know, I'm just trying to, you know. So, no, Bhishma Dev did not become that kind of person. He did not look at all the things that had happened to him in his life and just, you know, become like that. Not at all. Quite the opposite. Here he is on his deathbed. Now, let's take a look just for a second at this deathbed. Okay, traditionally we think, oh, you know, he died in his sleep. Who was it just died? Some big musician, some rock and roll musician died just yesterday. And we talked about how he died so peacefully in his home, surrounded by his family. You know, this is not the kind of deathbed that Bhishma did. He's laying on a bed of arrows. Have any of you ever done that? You know, they've got that, it's a acupuncture kind of standing pad. You know, it's about this big. And you stand on it with your bare feet. My God, is that torturous. And I think I can do that for about 3 seconds. And then, of course, we have the traditional picture of yogis laying on the bed of nails, you know. You just kind of lay there and sit there and move around. And Bhishma Dev is laying on a bed of arrows. They've all been shot out and put there, and he's laying on top of it. This is a true warrior's deathbed. This is the way a warrior goes out, you know, as in the old Viking times, it would be, you know, with their sword in their hand. You know, sometimes even in the battlefield, if they dropped the sword, the friend would take it and put it in their hand before they died. So they die with their axe or their sword in their hand. This is a warrior. This is how Bhishma Dev is dying, on a bed made of arrows. And yet, in that situation, he's feeling great empathy for his wronged family member. I mean, what situation, this is an ideal situation where he could look back and just, oh, woe is me. But he doesn't do that. There's no self-pity involved in this. Am I not on? Have I been off this whole time? Of course, I'm always off. Everybody knows that. At any rate, there's no self-pity. You know, he's not looking at his situation and thinking how difficult it is. No. He has no regrets of what wasn't accomplished in his life. Oh, if I hadn't taken that vow for my father's sake and gotten married, I'd be a happy householder somewhere surrounded by grandkids and great-grandkids. I wouldn't be laying here on this bed of arrows. No thoughts of just thinking, well, if I could just stick around a little bit longer. Prabhupada tells that famous story of the very wealthy man that he's on his deathbed and he's begging the doctors, please, I'll pay you anything. Just give me a few more hours, a few more days. I have not yet completed my plans. And of course, as Prabhupada tells his story, he's laughing at the insanity of such a proposal. So no. Bhishma Dev is instead concerned about the suffering of the Pandavas and the mental anguish that Yudhishthira is putting himself through. Now this is an amazing quality to understand by observing another, that they're in anxiety, that they're distressed, and then wanting to feel something. And what was Bhishma's mood? His mood is right here in these Sanskrit words. Dharma nandana na artaha klishtam. You boys are the son of religion personified. You do not deserve this. The Sanskrit's very clear on this. Never ahartam, deserve. You never deserved what? Klishtam. The suffering. You did not deserve this suffering. Now, we see many times in a court of law, When the sentence is passed down by the judge on behalf of the jury, he's representing their finding, and it falls against the defendant, it's common for the family members to cry out, "Oh, he doesn't deserve this." But in this case, we have one of the 12 greatest personalities in history, one of the 12 Mahajans. And he's making this claim of innocence and mistreatment. Therefore, we can believe it. In this court of law I refer to here, the family members, generally speaking, they really don't have, you know, a balanced view. You know, no, my boy, you know, he didn't do so on and so on like that. You know, there's like that. You know, it didn't happen like that. But Bhishma Dev is qualified to point out that no, these boys were innocent. They were completely mistreated. The difficulties that they went through were not deserved by them. They did nothing to expect that. All of us in this world were suffering from our karma. That's why we're here. We've made some foolish decision and we have to live with that decision. You know, raising children, you see that very clearly. Some good advice is given, some suggestion, and then you have to let it. And sometimes the decision made is not in the best interest. But it has to work itself out. It has to go through that process. So, sadly for us, we've made the bad decision, but we don't want the reaction. When the child puts their hand on the stove, it's a very common scenario. Little kid comes into the kitchen with the mother, and the mother points to this, hot, hot. You hear the little two-year-olds, hot, hot. They love to say that, hot, hot. It's a nice sound for them to repeat. But they don't connect it. And when they touch that stove and their hand gets burned, they don't want that reaction of the blisters and the pain and the suffering that it gives. But that's the reality. So we don't want to go through all of these difficulties we experience in this world. Dukalayama shashvatam. A miserable place full of suffering. But because we've come here, because we've made that choice, because we have this material body by our own desire, we have to. But Bhishma Dev is one of the 12 Mahajans, is pointing out, no, these Pandavas, they did not deserve this. So this is one of the qualifications of an advanced devotee, that they can perceive the suffering of others, feel empathy for that suffering, and understand whether it is righteous or not that that individual is suffering. Sometimes when I'm at the Woodstock Festival and, you know, different people ask different questions and all. You know, it's kind of an interesting scenario what you get. And sometimes, you know, you're a little cautious about you. So there was one time there was this lady sitting there. And I had been speaking for some time about being a vegetarian, about the sinful reactions of eating meat and like that. And so she raised her hand and I called on her and she said, you know, I'm a vegetarian, but my son is not, my teenage son, and so I cook meat for him in the house. So if I understand what you're saying, I'm going to get a reaction for that. This is in front of about 50 or 60 people, and so I said, so shall I give you a truthful answer or speak something that's going to make you feel good? She says, no, I want the truth. I said, yes, you're one of the 7 people that will get a sinful reaction for meeting him, and I list all the people. And I felt really bad. Anyway, she and there was another person there sitting next to her. They got up and they left in the middle of everything. This is common. People come and go all the time when you're speaking. And I thought, I really wanted to kind of touch base with this person. But I felt, you know. Anyway, didn't see them the rest of the day. And then the next day, in the middle of one of my classes, dropped in again. And this time stayed till that my session was finished. And then I got a hold of her afterwards, and with a translator, I said, you know, I wanted to apologize. I didn't mean to put you on the spot and make you feel. She said, no, you don't understand. That young person sitting next to me was my teenage son. He's the one I was asking about. And when he heard that I'm also going to get this sinful reaction after your lecture, he told me, he said, Mom, I'm going to give up eating meat. I don't want you to suffer. So this is empathy. He understood, oh, my mother's going to suffer because of what I want. All right, therefore, let me act differently. So, Grandfather Bhishma, He understands the suffering. There's no hard-heartedness in his heart. There's no unconsciousness of the difficulties that others are going through. That type of thinking, this was and is clearly the foundation of the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Sankirtan movement. Going out into the streets, giving the Harinam to everyone, distributing Krishna consciousness in whatever form, prasadam, books, the holy name, all these different methods, you know. This was Prabhupada's mood, and coming here in the West, he embraced this mood. You know, he understood the suffering that was going on here, and he understood what could be done to correct it. And so, out of great feeling, great compassion, great empathy for this difficulty others were going through, Prabhupada underwent so many difficulties, so many austerities. This is why Prabhupada spent so much time writing books. This is why Prabhupada spent so much time traveling throughout the world and establishing temples. This is why Prabhupada initiated so many thousands of disciples. Not for the sake of name, fame, and worship, but only because of the feeling of empathy for the suffering that others were experiencing and what he could do to relieve that. And Bhishma Devi even asked, how did you manage to stay alive through all this? Any average person would have died. Any average person would have given up their own life at half the number of difficulties that were thrust upon all of you. Not these Pandavas. Many times we see people, you know, the high rate of suicide that is present in our modern society. Srila Prabhupada speaks about this often. He points out how material wealth, the accumulation of material facility, the blessing of the development of material opportunity does not necessarily bring happiness. Prabhupada said, if so, why are so many wealthy persons committing suicide? We see this. And then when it's all taken away, he cites the example during the great stock crash of the 30s. When this was going on, people were jumping off of roofs. All these wealthy men that had lost everything, how will I carry on? Prabhupada talks about this one Bengali gentleman, very wealthy man, and he lost everything. During the separation with the British, he became very wealthy by doing business with the British. And so he gave all that up to support the freedom movement, and he had to live in a very simple means. And Prabhupada mentions how friends would give donations to him just so his life was a little less difficult. But he said it was the greatest austerity for him because he had all this and then gave it up. So most people, when they're in that situation, the difficulties come on, and then immediately they want to give up their life. Those that persevere through these difficulties, that's real character. So Bhishma is asking, how did you manage? Almost as if he's saying, okay, what was your secret? But the amazing thing about the Mahajans is they ask a question and then can answer it at the same time. One of the most common things I get asked in at work, somebody will come up and say, can I ask you a stupid question? To which I respond, well, there's no question that's stupid if he gives you an answer so that you understand what you're trying to do. You know, sadly, more times than not, it is a really stupid question. But the nature of a Mahajan is not the point. So at any rate, Bhishma Dev asked this. He said, how did you manage through all of these difficulties? And then he answers it. You were blessed by three things: the Brahmanas, the Lord himself, and the execution of your religious principles. Now, it's a common thing, it's a standard to list things in devotional service by numbers. For instance, we know that there are five personalities that give entrance, give blessings to be able to go to the holy dham. Braj Raj, the sacred dust of Vrindavan, Govardhan, Jamuna, Vrinda Devi, and Gopeshwar Mahadev. These five personalities could be prayed to for entrance to the Dham. I have a little box of double mercy. It's Braj Raj, but it's Braj Raj from Govardhan. And it's on the headboard of my bed, and every night before I go to bed, I touch it to my head, and you know, so maybe one day I'll get to go back there. So this is a thing, to list these different things. Now, back when I was a brahmachari, yes, that did exist once, and I had copious amounts of time to study, I put together a collection of numbers in Krishna consciousness. This was from the Nectar Devotion. Now, it seems that I'm not the only one that finds it easy to connect things when they're laid out in a numerical fashion. It's an easy way to understand a point. So anyway, I compiled this list here. I actually still have it. And it has an unfinished format of 32 different categories of numbers in Krishna consciousness. Now, of course, this is handwritten. This is back in the day, as we say, before we had electronic this and that. You know, you sat down with a pen and paper and a notebook and, you know, your little mantra cards, as I brought those in and showed those before. I actually remember back when I was a brahmachari, my mother gave me money to buy a tape deck. And boy, was I the cat's meow in the brahmachari ashram. I actually had, and it was a Sony. It was a pretty decent one at the time, you know. But anyway, back then, any of these types of notes and study and reference we did by hand. So I put together these categories, just to name a few. The six characteristics of pure devotional service. The five types of liberation. The four stages of sinful activity. Nine types of devotional service and their examples. Six degrees of executing devotional service. Four defects of the conditioned souls, six methods of association, two types of activities, three divisions of Krishna's qualities, the six features of conjugal love, things like this, you know. Just so this type of putting together of lists like that, it makes it easier for us to, with our linear mind, to put together, oh, okay, so here and here and that. Oh, all right, so that comes like that. So, you know, this is one of these examples of how this works in the foundation I have in it, anyway. But anyway, so back to the verse in the purport. Bhishma Dev in the verse, and Prabhupada elaborates a bit in the purport, note that there were these three items that protected the Pandavas. This means, since the Bhagavatam is there for us to study and apply to our lives, that when we're facing difficulties in our lives, we can know from Shastra, we can know from the Mahajans, that having friendships and shelter with the Brahmanas, being under the protection of the Lord Himself, and following the religious principles will get us through that difficulty. Now, there's so many examples of this, both in our personal lives and in the lives shown in the Shastras here. Many, many times when someone faces a challenge or an obstacle, the first thing that goes out the window is their execution of religious principles. Well, I just have to bend the rules just a little bit, bend these moral standards just to get by. It's only temporary. I'm just going to do it for now. Or, well, I don't really have the need. I can't take associating with these saintly persons right now who can guide me and prevent me from falling deeper into despair. I'll just give that up. Or ultimately, I have no relationship with the Lord. Look what he's done to me. There is no God. So in this way, it's common for these three things to be completely disregarded. But we see from this example given right here in this verse that these are the very things that got the Pandavas through all of their difficulties. So when facing obstacles, and all of us do, every one of us, we should be very thoughtful about what we're willing to give up when trouble comes our way. Now, Prabhupada makes a very strong statement here in this purport. You know, it's amazing how many times Prabhupada says something that's just like, there's a phrase amongst street Bostonians. And a phrase is called the dope slap. A dope slap is like, come on, really? When you get some information given to you that is just so amazing, it's like it slaps you upside the head with its, you know, profoundness. Prabhupada makes a statement back here that is just, it's so amazing, it should be framed and mounted on the wall. Oh, maybe better yet, turn into a tattoo. You know, then you'll never forget it. So here's the statement. As long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life. No cause for despondency. Simple. No cause. Now, what's the relevance of Bhishma Dev bringing up this point? He could see that Yudhishthira was totally distressed, feeling very bad about all the death that had come as a result of this great battle of Kurukshetra. It's interesting, the capitalization of something shows it to be a proper noun. So the great battle of Kurukshetra, all the letters are capitalized. All the first letters are, so it's a noun. The great battle of Kurukshetra. It was a significant event. So, and frankly, what was the purpose of the great battle of Kurukshetra? To put Yudhishthira on the throne. So he was feeling pretty bad, like, you know, this whole battle's my fault. This was all about giving me the throne. And so, you know, so therefore, Bhishma Dev brings this out. He brings it up into the conversation. He airs the point. It's not to be left unspoken and buried away. And we spoke about feelings and emotions yesterday. It's not something that's just going to be left unsettled. But Bhishma Dev points out, you and your brother suffered such great injustice. So much difficulties you experienced. Your land was taken, and then the insult of what land given back to you was given to you. You had to hide in the forest. There was the attempted murder of the entire family by the burning of the house of Lot. There was the attempted murder of Bhima. There was the cheating in the game of chess. There was the insult to the wife, Draupadi. It goes on and on and on and on. The whole Mahabharata is just made up with just the endless insults against the Pandavas. So these were the injustices that you did nothing to deserve. This is what Bhishma is saying. However, the war and the death and the destruction that it brought were the legitimate karmic reaction to the Kauravas' endless atrocities against you Pandavas. So he's encouraging him that, yes, you've been placed upon the throne here, but this is not your doing. This is happening because the reaction to what the Kauravas did has brought this about. All of this death, all of this destruction. They had so many opportunities. Krishna himself went and begged them, look, let's try and find a way out of this war. You know, let's solve this. You know, nobody wants a war. You know? And they just had nothing to hear from him. So Bhishma points out, this is not your doing. This is their own doing. And ultimately, it's the desire of the Lord to have religious, righteous devotees ruling the throne of the kingdom. This is good for the planet, and it's good for the praja, for the people. So Yudhishthira, you shouldn't feel some despondency, some difficulty. This isn't anything to do with your direct desire. This is all the reaction for the Kauravas, for their sinful activities, for their atrocities against the Pandavas, for their neglect of the religious principles, for their neglect of morality. So we should always endeavor in our own lives to strictly follow the religious principles under the guidance of Krishna, under the guidance of the Guru. And we should always seek the shelter of the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas. Then when we do that, we can be assured that our path is solid, it's protected. Does it mean we're going to be free from difficulty? Does it mean we're going to be free from any danger? Well, if we have to ask that question, we weren't paying attention during the last chapter, Prayers of Queen Kunti. Any doubt about that, Just go back and read that chapter again. I mean, of course, Prayers to Queen Kunti is one of my favorite chapters in the Bhagavatam, and the lectures that Prabhupada gave in 1972 in Los Angeles on this series, I mentioned that when I spoke on a couple of classes in that chapter. You know, 1 month of lectures on that chapter of the Bhagavatam proper. So if we have any doubts about, am I going to have to suffer or not, we can reread that about how we can get through it. But we can know for a fact that by following these guidelines, sticking to our religious principles, taking shelter of Krishna, and taking shelter of the brahmanas, that then we'll be protected. Then we'll have the proper shelter. And then one last point here. How did this happen? Why did this happen? Aren't devotees supposed to be protected? Why should they suffer like this? Now, these are valid questions, and any thoughtful person would, well, wait a minute, can I ask a question here? These are the Lord's most intimate associates. Why are they having to suffer like this? So, what are the answers? Well, verses 13, 14, 15, and 16 that we're going to cover in the next few days, these answer these. And again, they're being answered by Bhishmadeva, the Mahajans. He asks these questions, and then he answers them. This is the nature of an exalted devotee of an advanced soul. They have the ability to ask questions and to give the answer at the same time. So, shelter of the Brahmins, strictly shelter of the Lord, and carefully following our religious principles guarantees us all good fortune in this life. These three things. So we'll finish there. If anybody has any questions or comments? We got two. Well, what they call in history the Great War, World War II, that was directly the sinful reaction to Hitler and his campaign against practically the world, particularly the Jews, you know. So there was great suffering and difficulty there. In that scenario, though, we weren't talking about one camp being truly religious as the devoted followers of the Lord and the other camp being completely the opposite. All parties were engaged in sinful activities. Just that one side was considerably more sinful, and so the reaction came with a complete annihilation. But nonetheless, difficulties are not. We have to adhere to these principles. No matter how severe the difficulties, one person's severity of difficulties may not be the same level of severity that someone else can tolerate. So regardless, when we're going through these difficulties, we have to internally take shelter in this way. Otherwise, we become atheists. It's the easiest thing to do, just to deny God's presence. Well, this wouldn't happen if there was God. What's that famous book that one Jewish scholar wrote? Why do bad things happen to good people? Because they're not good people. None of us are good. Why are we here? You know, we're here because we made bad choices. And yet we expect everything's going to be rosy. No, it's not going to be.
It almost seems like the word injustice or unjust almost doesn't apply in one way because
you're holding the mic out here. They can't hear you, neither can I.
It almost seems like the word injustice or unjust doesn't apply when you're thinking of the whole chain of reaction and conflict comes out. You know what I mean? Like, every person's arranging everything. Everything's just.
Krishna is the supreme controller. Whether we can wrap our minds around that or not, that's the reality. One of my favorite phrases that Prabhupada uses, you're not trying to understand this with your pea-like brain. You know, it's both a explanation and an insult at the same time. It's all there for us to read. Whether we accept it, whether we can embrace it or not, that's a question of faith. That's a question of individual, you know, belief, of acceptance of what's been given to us. It doesn't change the reality. I'm going to get myself in trouble here. I'm not so keen on seatbelts. Not that I'm not keen on that. I'm not so conscious of always remembering to do it. You know, it's a habit I'm a little slack in. And I know I'm going to get all kinds of emails because last time this came up, people got all over my case. At any rate, that's the reality. But if I get pulled over by the policeman, reality or not, accept it or not, you know, boom, okay, here's your ticket, you know. So I may have it as a habit to do it. I may believe that it should be done. I may have, oops, just forgotten, whatever. Here's the reaction, boom. So the material world is what it is. We may not like it. We may not want to accept it. We may want to balance it. But the reality is otherwise. You can send all email complaints to don'tcare.com. Madhamati, you were next, and then Shudevi. Well, either way, I guess it doesn't matter. Empathy is a symptom of a soft heart. A soft heart is required for spiritual advancement. Prabhupada many times gives the example of, you know, just going to the forest and doing austerities, that if austerities is not honed with compassion, then one's heart becomes very hard. You know, okay, so you can go, you know, 6 months just standing on one foot, but what does it do? What happens to your heart? What changes? And this is one of the principles of, Prabhupada speaks about this on so many lectures. This is, he says, how you can see if you're advancing in Krishna consciousness, that you become soft-hearted, that you become concerned for others, you know. So it's not that we become a devotee and just don't care about anybody else. You know, this is why the examples like this of Grandfather Bhishma are there. You know, certainly Grandfather Bhishma is suffering. There's no question. But at the same time, his concern is for the well-being of these Pandavas. So this is the example that we should try and embrace. As I said, this is the whole point between Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan and between Prabhupada's mission. To share Krishna consciousness, to show some concern for others and give that out. You know, it's a necessity for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Oh, they already took it. It's gone. There it is.
Oh, you know, I appreciate your
how do we make sure that we don't go off balance in the sense of, like Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was so empathetic that he went into depression. So that's my question.
We balance it just like we balance everything else. Guru, Sastra, and Sadhu. We have to have all three influences there, not just an empathetic heart that, you know, oh geez, everybody's suffering so bad, it's all my fault, you know, like that. But we have to balance that. And Yudhishthira is showing that balance, and by the end of this chapter, we understand that. You know, we see from the balance of Yudhishthira's life that he did appreciate that message of Bhishma Dev, because look at the example he gave. You know, he ruled the rest of the kingdom. You know? So, you know, this has to be balanced, everything we do. Again, three items. You know, Guru, Sastra, and Sadhu. You know, by these three things, then we can get the proper balance in our life. Feelings of empathy, feelings of compassion, you know, introspectiveness, understanding our position in life. These can all be answered, everything, by understanding it in a relationship to these three. And this is why we have Vaishnava Sangha. This is why Sadhu Sangha is so, so very important. The association of Vaishnavas, see, guidance in our life of Vaishnavas is essential for developing a balanced and sane thinking about devotional practices. Otherwise, we can become a fanatic on one end or the other. And we see lots of those, you know, in all religious traditions, you know. That's the people, you know, flying planes into buildings and blowing up towns and vegetable markets and whatever. You know, fanatics on both ends and writing endless things on the internet, you know, those kind of bombs also. But by the association of Sadhu, Vaishnava, Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, by that type of circle, we can keep ourselves honed in and balanced properly.
It's probably, this is a speculation, I mean, you can say more about it. Since you're saying World War II, it's probably like a complicated mixture of a few things, like injustices, karmic reactions. You know, it's a complicated mixture of things that we can't really, like Krishna only knows, like what is that mixture? But it probably wasn't, there's probably no righteous wars in Kali Yuga. There's probably like no righteousness involved, but a mixture of like injustices and karmic reaction of different people and Hitler. It's probably just like a mix that, you know, ultimately was like perfect, but we can't really understand like the mix of it. Like we can't comprehend it.
I hate to ask you this, but if you'll do that first half again, I just changed the setting on my hearing aids and I can hear the voice clearer now. So I got the last half and not the first half.
It's a stupid question.
No.
Like you were saying, World War II, it's probably a complicated mixture of like various injustices and karmic reactions that was ultimately like perfect, but we can't really like understand it completely.
It's true, we can't understand these things completely because we don't see the whole picture. Just as an example from work again, because that's unfortunately such a major part of my life. If I have an exchange with one of the other employees that's, you know, they're not doing something the way it should be or causing a problem, I don't go to them directly, I'll go to their manager, because there may be a bigger picture that I don't see that this fills a part. Oh, okay, now they have a whole package to deal with. So in the same way as we go through difficulties in our Krishna consciousness, difficulties in our execution of life, or observe it in others, we're not seeing the whole picture of what's brought everything to this point. So therefore, we're only getting a partial representation of it. And then based on that, we try and draw a conclusion. Well, everybody knows that factual evidence has to be supported all the way across. We can't, the minute the speculative process comes into it, the conclusion becomes jaded. So we don't know the full picture. And unless we're a Mahajan like Bhishma Dev, the opportunity of knowing the full picture is very limited. Therefore, being guided by those that do, even if it may not be in our very specific that day, that hour situation, will give us the general principle on how we can move forward. All right, we'll finish there. It's 9 o'clock. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. What's that? Oh, somebody on the internet? Yeah, we have to give them credit. They're out there listening. It's a long one. The whole thing here. Okay. The question coming in. Oh, is this from Stita De Morning?
Yeah.
I'll get you for this, Stita. All right. Some benefit for charitable mentality and some reaction for sinful activity. This is conditioned life. Fun thought concerning bad things happening to good people also happens because it's not a bad thing from the ultimate perspective. Okay, this is true because it's working out an individual's karma. Krishna consciousness goes beyond good and bad from the conditioned analysis. Krishna has everyone's best interest at heart. It's easy to say it's therapeutic when it's compared to the experience of going through material life. Yeah, these are all very valid points. You know, Krishna does have our best interest at heart. So this goes back to your question, Shridhis. We just have to have that faith that Krishna's looking out for us. You know. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.